This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron over at the Norris Group, and today we have Amanda Hahn and Matt McFarland with Keystone CPA. This is a revisit. We've done a lot of different coronavirus updates over the last month. This one might be a little bit shorter because we're just sort of on hold waiting for a lot of information, but some interesting things have happened, and I guess we'll just start with that. Welcome, guys.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you. It's ever-changing, right? The ever-changing climate of coronavirus and CARES Act.
Yeah, and I think it's just been so overwhelming, and I've chosen not to do many radio shows. I'm just sort of like a wait and see. I'm waiting to see. Mm-hmm. What's frustrating at the federal, state, and the local levels is everybody's sort of layering on these risks, and it's mind-boggling to watch. I don't take politicians seriously when they try to just be cute and deal with something that sounds really sexy on paper, but then you're like, what are you doing? Like, that doesn't make any sense because you're messing with contract law. I don't even understand how you want that to work. It looks cute on a resume, but not doable. So anyway, <Right. laughs> I guess let's start at the federal level. Since we've talked for several weeks ago, what's been some of the second round of the payroll protection program has come around. So that's been interesting, and some more business has been funded. I can only imagine round three is coming, but they've made some updates. You sent me an email this morning saying there was something that the IRS was looking at. Please share.
I think when we did a couple the last radio show and a couple podcasts we did before, at the time, mainly people were focused on applying for the loan, right? How do I apply? How do I calculate the loan amount? And so it was a frenzy of, questions and uncertainty. So now we have the second round of questions and uncertainties, but mostly around the forgiveness portion, right? How much is forgiven? How do we calculate the loan forgiveness? So just like the first round, there's a lot of questions and unknowns. Answers to those questions are coming out almost on a daily basis, but that's where people are at. I think, the investors and the businesses that applied or were eligible for PPP loans, most have applied. And the good news is that we're hearing more and more people get approved for the loans, small businesses, which I think was one of the major changes, right, to round two of the PPP loan funding. The government wanted to make sure small businesses were getting it, and not just like the Ruth Chris of the world. So that's good. We have several clients, investors, business owners who've received the money, but now there's this fear of people are, not sure they want to take the money. In fact, I had a couple clients yesterday and today who said they're leaning towards just giving that money back because just very unsure of how to use this money, what we can use it for, and how do we calculate the forgivable amount. So that's a lot of where the uncertainty is.
There's a lot of situations I think where it's people are, they don't think they're going to be able to bring their employees back because maybe some business, the employees are making more on unemployment than they would if they were hired back on their job, which obviously just sounds wacky when you think about it, but apparently they're getting, maybe the unemployment benefits they're receiving are not tied to how much they were making in the job before. So they're just getting paid a flat rate. And so then the people who are taking these loans are, well, I can't hire them back because they don't want to come back to work,
Right. Well, the loan didn't specify it had to be the same person. It's more of the number, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the issue being that, especially for California, between federal and state unemployment, people are getting $800 to over $1,000 per week. And so for many employees, that's not even what they were getting paid, before coronavirus. So there's a reluctancy to go back. And so that was one of the questions. Thankfully, Treasury came out this week and had said, okay, so if you're an employer, your employees have left, assuming you can't replace them, right? Assuming you can't just hire someone else to replace them. Then what you need to do is make an offer to them. So it has to be a documented offer where you're giving, you know, you're offering them the same, you know, at least the same rate and number of hours as before the coronavirus hit. And if they turn the offer down, it must be, you know, in writing, or at least via email, I guess, right? Documentation, the offer was made, and documentation that they've turned it down. So if, as an employer, if you're able to get that from these ex-employees, then the fact that you didn't end up, you know, getting them back in terms of headcount doesn't hurt you. So that is a little bit of a relief. But yes, you're right, Aaron. Alternatively, you can hire other people. So if, you know, if Matt was my employee and he didn't want to come back to work, which, you know, very well could be because I'm a slave driver, I've heard. Yeah. So I can hire Aaron instead.
Well, and Aaron, she wants 8-hour days, dude. Can you believe that?
Oh, my goodness. Terrible. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I could hire someone else instead. But, you know, so some of the questions, like we have a client who's in the DJ business. So, you know, question is, well, you know, where am I going to find these other people who are going to be DJs? And I think another confusing point for people too, you know, specific to this situation is there, you know, I have clients who tell me, well, so I could hire these people back, but I don't have anything for them to do. I don't have any job, I don't have projects, so I can't even hire them back because they have nothing to do. So it's a really important distinction that the PPP program is for you to pay payroll irrespective of whether they're actually physically working or not. So the understanding is that even if these people are not actually working, you know, as a DJ or working in your business in the office every day, that you're still keeping them on payroll. So just because you don't actually have work for them, that's not a problem. You can still pay them for it.
Wow. That's awfully nice. Okay.
Yeah. So if Matt doesn't want to work for me and Aaron, you know, my offer is I will pay you what I was paying Matt, right? And you don't even have to call in to work if my business was not able to be open because of quarantine, or if we just kind of get free money.
I think Amanda, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole forgiveness calculation and reduction of payroll and what have you is measured at the whole, right? So it's not like they're not looking at individual by individual that, okay, well, that person stopped working for you and that person reduced your wages by 50%. It's just overall as a business, right? You're looking at, you know, number of employees and how much did your payroll change, if it did or not, right?
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Well, so say like one of your executives left, got another job, you could technically maybe replace them with two worker bees to do some different things. It accomplishes the same thing. Your payroll, the numbers are actually increased, but your payroll stays the same.
Certainly.
Okay. Yeah. So I think you're being creative. And then the forgiveness part. So from what I think the original was 75% had to go to payroll and the rest 25% could go to expenses, correct?
Yeah, right. So there was a little bit of confusion about that. But yeah, currently as it stands, so if you get a PPP loan, you use 75% for payroll, the other 25% for other eligible expenses. Then potentially 100% of that loan could be forgiven. But if payroll is less than 75%, then there's a reduction calculation in terms of how much could be forgiven. And that's why, you know, there's key to, you really want to try and spend at least 75% of that to be on payroll expenses. But, you know, practically speaking, what we're seeing a lot is, you know, again, some people don't want to come back to work. They are on unemployment already. And as a business owner, though, right, you still have expenses like rent and overhead and software and just, you know, just general expenses. So a couple members of the Senate is trying to put together a bill to reduce that percentage to about 50%. So saying, okay, instead of 75% having to go to payroll, can we reduce it so that if 50% goes to payroll, the other 50% goes to these eligible, you know, business operation expenses, then the forgiveness part won't be decreased. So we're in a waiting pattern to see if that gets passed or not at this point. Hopefully it will pass. I think it gives business owners a little bit more flexibility. Because again, you know, the payroll part, it's sometimes difficult to get employees to come back or even hire new people when, you know, a lot of people are preferring to go unemployment.
Yeah, they just want to stay at home because they may be scared. Like, I get it. It's so complicated. And you have to really make sure that you're keeping track of exactly how you're spending the money. And I guess I definitely am concerned. Could they come back and, I mean, they're clearly changing the rules to be more flexible, but could they come back and say, yeah, you know what? We just decided it's not going to be forgivable. Like, we're going to go ahead and need to convert that to an actual loan.
And they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, it is. It's a little concerning. And, you know, when does that forgiveness happen? I mean, I don't know.
So that's
the other thing too is that there's now recently been talk that came out about, you know, 'cause there are a lot of questions like, hey, well, obviously I'm getting, you know, money from the government. You know, the plan was that money was going to be tax-free. You know, they give you whatever $50,000 PPP loan and it's forgiven. It's not taxable income to you. Great. But then the question a lot of people have, well, what about the expenses I'm paying, you know, these expenses I'm using this money for, are those deductible? And as it currently stands, they're saying, no, it's not, which, you know, in theory makes sense because you're using somebody else's money to pay for it. Okay, I get it. But if you actually run through the math, if you do it the way they're currently writing it, then it actually, the money that you get ends up actually being taxable if you run through the math calculation. So it's kind of, something's not adding up, obviously, you know? Mm. And so I know the Senate is talking about trying to change that, and then, you know, the AICPA is also putting in some, you know, push to get that changed so you can deduct the expenses. 'Cause otherwise, you know, the money that, you know, you get is actually end up paying taxes on it. So
the good news is we have all year to figure it out, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, so yes and no, right? The what I was mentioned earlier, we have clients who are thinking, well, maybe I'll just give the PPP loan back and go on unemployment or go back on unemployment myself, right, as a business owner. And that, there's that uncertainty. It's like, okay, let's say I took out $20,000 of a loan and I've paid it to myself, I paid it to the employees, and that's all great. But what I've given up is unemployment in the interim, unemployment income. And so what happens if I don't even know until later this year whether the loan is forgiven, right? If it's not forgiven, then I pay my employees maybe to stay home and do nothing. And I'm still on the hook to pay back the government this
right.
money, right? Albeit 1% interest, but that's still my money. So there's these really kind of more, you know, specific real world issues that we're seeing as we talk to different clients who, you know, on the face of it, it's like, wow, congratulations, you got the loan. But now they have this headache of, oh my gosh, well, how am I going to spend it? And am I going to get it forgiven, right? I don't want to spend money that's actually not mine. That's the last thing we want to do during a recession or COVID-19 uncertainty is to get into more debt, right, than we otherwise would have needed to go into.
Well, and to that point, I mean, as you understand it, if you get this loan and you use it as specified by the rules, so let's just say 75% has to go to payroll. If you're able to document that, is that your understanding that the loan in its entirety can be forgiven if you use it correctly?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's okay. The intention. But, you know, something that that you and Matt were saying too, right, is they could add additional stipulations later on, right? We don't expect that to happen, but they certainly could, just to add, you know, if you add one sentence to the code or the regulations or any, you know, Treasury release statements, that could change the forgiveness calculation, right? Or the ability to get the loan forgiveness to a whole new different level. And we've seen that, you know, with respect to the EIDL loan, right? So when it first came out, $10,000 grant, tax-free money for anyone who applied. We were supposed to get it within, three business days. And then one day they just said, oh, actually that $10,000 is limited to $1,000 per employee. So that really changed the whole program, at least for our landlord clients who don't have people on payroll, right? So one sentence can make all the difference.
Well, and then would it have been better for them to do the other program? Because you're not supposed to do both. You're supposed to choose, correct?
No, you can certainly have the PPP as well as the EIDL loan. That's a common misconception. So you can certainly apply for both and obtain both loans. The restriction is that you can't double dip on the loan. So If I got the $10,000 grant, I can't use that money to say I'm also use that to pay for my payroll that I, you know, got the PPP loan for. So you can have both. You just can't double dip on the same expense.
Got it.
But yeah, but the good thing though about the EIDL loan I just want to mention is, you know, like I said, people with, you know, a lot of our clients, ourselves included, we've applied for the EIDL loan as a landlord. Like back in the day when it first came out, there was no stipulation of having W-2s. So they've made that change to say only available for W-2s. But in the last couple of weeks, maybe last 2 weeks or so, we've had many clients who've told us they received the EIDL loan, although they've never had any employees. So that's some good news. Right? Even though they changed the law, but it looks like the system didn't catch up. So some of those older applications still got funded, even though the landlords didn't have any employees.
It was pretty crazy how quickly the money ran out the first time. And I just have a feeling, and I understand, I got a lot of feedback as far as if you were with a smaller community bank and you had a depository relationship, you were much more likely to get in line to at least get through the second round. But if you're a really small business and you don't have a good bookkeeper and the kind of backup information that they're going to ask for, you might not really be prepared for being able to process the loan. So I think there is going to be a round three. And unfortunately, I think the people that will be covered mostly in the round three are probably going to be the really small businesses. I think minority-owned businesses. I see the effort at the federal level to really sort of address the really small businesses with very few employees, just because they're not like Ruth's Chris ready to step in or an MBA team. I mean, it's been pretty funny to watch the people that are like, just kidding, we'll give it back. So I don't know. But it is good that it's coming.
Can you blame them? You know, it's like, hey, free money from the government. You know, who's going to say, no, I don't want that?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I don't know who would say no to that. So, yeah, you sort of got to do it and just be careful and use it wisely. At this point, I'm just really interested to see how the states end up rolling out. I've had to travel, unfortunately, to Florida. I'm going to have to again this weekend. And it's been really strange to travel. There's like nothing open in the airports. The airplanes are close to empty. When I was flying back from Florida last time, I had to, in Dallas, two of the planes broke down back to back. So I was in Dallas for, 5 hours. And finally, the third plane worked. So I was able to get back to California. But even still, combined planes because two broke, you know, the plane still wasn't full. It's really strange to watch.
Not only are you worried about getting a virus while you're on the plane that can kill you, you're actually worried about the plane crashing because apparently they don't work anymore. maintenance people aren't working.
Yeah, maintenance people decided to go on unemployment because they're getting the pandemic unemployment
right? Yeah. Making more money.
No, yeah, I mean, it's true. So if you're maxing out at, what is this? Is it $450 a week or $900 a week?
So my understanding was the federal government, I think, is $600 a week plus the state. And the amount from the state can vary. So the highest I've heard is over $1,000 a week. So probably for someone who was on, you know, maybe like a little bit higher payroll previously. But yeah, I mean, that's a real problem, you know, in terms of just people getting paid more for not working. And, you know, there's really not a whole lot of incentive to return.
Well, and our poor nonprofits, like, you know, if they're, you know, have employees that are on the minimum wage and they're looking at, wait a second, I can go on unemployment and get this extra bump and not have to do anything. Sign me up. So it's scary being part of a nonprofit and watching how busy they're getting with such increased demand. I mean, it's a scary time for people. California, have they done anything ridiculous on top of federal stuff, sort of like they do with opportunity zones that make it more complex, or what are you seeing?
On the tax side, not so much. I mean, they've conformed to the federal in terms of extending all the deadlines and the payment deadlines and things like that. So that was, I mean, quite honestly, that was kind of a shock to me. But that's what they did, so that's good. It makes life easier for people living in California with respect to their taxes, at least.
Okay, well that is good. There are different buckets of money that are slowly formed. So. I'm on the chair of 211 of Riverside County, and we're involved. We're subsidiary agency of United Way out here, and I think they're about to get a contract for $1.9 million for small business. So that's money. They're also put together a fund. They had a few big donors step up. So people in need could get in Riverside County, like just grants for like $500. So if you really aren't tied into the local level, you might not know what you're missing. So if you're a landlord and you live in San Diego and you've got a house in Riverside, you better do some homework. You might not know if your tenant's not being able to make rent, you might get to be really creative and really make their day. I mean, I've been surprised our loan business hasn't been impacted a great deal. And we have a lot of rental loans. Maybe that's because of some of the inventory we're not interested in funding, but I've been surprised. I thought we were going to have more loans ask for forbearance, and we barely have a glitch, which has been nice. And especially going into May, I mean, we're clearly not through May. Some things could still happen, but I'm excited to see us slowly start to open. I'm just going to be interested to see the spread, if it really picks up, you know, all that kind of stuff before. I just haven't been very motivated to do any more radio shows because I'm just really sort of wait and see at this point. We've got local politicians trying to add on rent control. You know, you can't raise rent for the next couple months. Why? it just adds such an unnecessary layer on top of what the state is trying to do. It's just a really difficult time to be a landlord right now and wage through this mess, especially if you own in a lot of different places. It's just really hard. Property managers are definitely earning their money.
I was going to say the other update on the loan side is, you know, before we talked a lot about how for landlords that don't have employees, you know, the EIDL loan was still a great option, right? Whether or not you got the grant. But for a lot of landlords, just get the loan, right? You might need it for cushion or, you know, to help with cash flow issues. And as of earlier this week, the EIDL loan program was updated as well. So all of a sudden on the SBA's website, there was an indication that the EIDL loan now is available only for agricultural businesses.
Oh.
And so even that took the landlords out of the playing field, even just for the loan part. You know, if we didn't have forgiveness, okay, fine, we had a loan. But then, you know, again, you know, one little sentence was added. Okay, now they're saying this is only for agricultural businesses. We're hopeful maybe that will be reversed, that hopefully in the near future that will be taken down and, you know, they will allow other non-farming businesses to also, you know, go back to taking advantage of that. But yeah, it's just, you know, things are changing all the time. And there's not as much publicity, you know, about that tweak going, you know, the EIDL only for agricultural. But I, you know, that's a major change, right, in the whole program itself. It highly limits most all other types of businesses.
Yeah. And I think there's just more coming down the pipeline, and there are going to be some businesses that will be hiring. So let's see, if you're a service in the loan industry, your loss mitigation department, I mean, you've gone from zero to 8,000 in a hot minute. Grocery delivery. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the switch, because I listen to a lot of different things and they're talking about a lot of jobs in the service sector aren't going to come back, but very slowly. I mean, in California, when you're talking about anything that has an audience involved, so entertainment, sports venues, they're going to be the last to open. And at that point, they're really talking about having to have some kind of antiviral or vaccine for that to make any kind of sense. And not just because, you know, everybody just wants to get back to life, but there's also the liability portion that you have to think about. If I'm on the sports arena and I allow people in and somebody gets sick, am I going to get sued? So do you have people signing waivers as they're entering in a theater or a sports arena? I mean, we're in California. You got to think about those kind of things. So we were talking about that. My gym trainer, they're like, we're just scared of liability. I'm like, have us sign a waiver. Like, yeah, we know that we might get it from lifting weights with you and we'll just take the risk. I'm like, I just need to get out of the house. I got to do something. Anyway, I'm trying to think of anything else to bug you guys about. Any other updates you can think of that might be good?
I know I don't remember obviously what dates things came out, but versus when we talked last, but you know, they made those changes to the net operating losses. I don't know if we talked about that last time or not, but at the federal level, if you had a net operating loss on your 18 or 19 return, or even going forward, if you have one on your 20 return, instead of making people carry those losses forward, they're now allowing people to carry those losses backwards up to 5 years, and apply those losses against, you know, years when you had income and conceptually get a refund of taxes you paid in the previous year. So,
oh, okay.
That was a nice change from the CARES Act. And that can then, you know, like I said, that applies to the 2018, 19, or 20. So obviously 2018, most people filed. I think the thing for people to know on that is if you filed 18 and had an NOL and, you know, obviously you carried it forward originally, but you go back and look with your advisor and, hey, I want to carry that back to 2013. There's a quick way to do that, and it's on a form 1045. People need to file that by June 30th. The benefit of that is you get your money sooner than if you go through the normal amended return process, which is a 1040X. So, you know, you can still do the 1040X. It just would take longer for people to get their money back, whereas the 1045, the IRS, I think, is supposed to give you your money within 90 days of filing. So,
do you have any clients that are getting creative talking to you thing about Rothification? Doing something with retirement accounts?
Yeah, the conversations come up a lot. Obviously, it makes sense. You know, markets are down right now. And we're just talking to clients about, okay, well, yeah, you know, conceptually that makes sense. But obviously, you know, in the big picture, you know, Roth IRA conversions, to make sense, you need to think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket at retirement age than you are right now. So that's the first step, you know, and, you know, assuming that's the case. And then do you have money outside your retirement account to pay the tax if there is going to be tax out of pocket? That's another assumption that needs to be there, I think, based on, you know, what we know. And the other thing is just managing tax brackets, because when you do a Roth conversion, you don't have to convert everything. You know, you don't have to convert your entire IRA. You can pick and choose how much you want to convert. So you can convert X amount this year, X amount next year. And we see people doing that to kind of stay in the same tax bracket. So they're kind of managing their brackets a little bit. So that's kind of some of the conversations we're having around Roth.
Well, especially if you haven't done your taxes yet and it's been extended, does it mean that I can also contribute for 2019 to my IRA if I wanted to, or maybe do that?
You can still, so basically people still have time up until July 15th to make a contribution to their traditional Roth IRA for 2019. So they extended that deadline. The only thing with, you know, talking about a conversion now is you think about what your 2020 taxable income is going to look like, because the one caveat is that a couple of years ago, they changed the rule that, you know, you used to be able to kind of, you know, do a conversion and you have some time to undo it if you just determine that, you know, hey, numbers didn't work out the way I wanted them to or what have you, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now if you do a conversion, there's no undo button anymore. So,
oh, really?
You do a conversion, you're stuck with it. So a lot of times we tell clients, let's wait till November, December to pull the trigger, because then you have a full year's worth of information to work off of. But obviously the con of waiting till the end of the year is that, you know, with market values down right now, you know, might be the better time to convert. So, you know, instead of something that was worth $40,000 3 months ago is worth 20 or whatever, or it could be worth 40 6 months from now, you know, it'd be better to convert a 20 versus 40, right? You know, all things being equal. But
interesting. Well, now is just a good time to have a really good CPA on your side strategizing, because you're stuck at home. And what else are you doing, right? Are you guys busy?
If you're not thinking about taxes 24 hours a day, there's something wrong with you.
Do you guys have a lot of your clients? I mean, you guys clearly specialize in the real estate investor crowd. Do you have a lot of clients reaching out to you, having those conversations?
Well, so not on the Rothification specifically, because, you know, it's difficult to do these, you know, conversions of real estate within a self-directed account. It's going to be, you know, generally like converting a whole property versus not converting it. But yeah, we have a lot of clients contacting us about, you know, the new depreciation rules, filing amended returns for carryback. You know, obviously all the loan things with respect to PPP and EIDL loan. So yeah, a lot of questions surrounding those. And we always encourage our clients too, you know, it doesn't have to be a very long extended conversation, but at least shoot us a quick email so we know what's going on. And then we can jump in and advise, you know, based on, you know, the transaction or the activity that people have going on. So But you're right. Yeah, a lot of people are at home. So, you know, thinking about taxes, thinking about finances, and this is a good time to do it, you know, because otherwise when you're busy with working, with, you know, investing, and taxes are generally not at the top of people's mind, like it is in today's environment.
Exactly. Well, what's the overall sense that you're getting from your clients? Are people really stressed, really struggling, really scared? Any temperature?
Well, I think, you know, we have a couple clients who have a lot of real estate that are, you know, that are maybe C-class real estate that have, you know, loans on the property. So I think those are the ones that are feeling the most pressure, right? Because they have to service the debt still, and they're, you know, much lower income from the rentals coming in. So we have a couple of those. But a lot of our clients, you know, have properties with little debt, or properties that are in better areas, right? Where the tenant profile is of higher income. So for a lot,
no, I'm not hearing a lot of problems. In fact, the conversation is more like, "Hey, I'm not going
to really sell that, rent, but can I still apply for the government? You know, any kind of government benefits?" So I'm hearing that quite a bit too. So it kind of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of all over the place depending on the investor, but certainly the ones that are more stressed right now are, you know, more multifamily apartments or just, you know, more C-class properties where a large percentage of the tenants are not paying.
Yeah, I definitely have some investors. We don't have loans, but where entire apartment buildings have had conversations and all the tenants have agreed just to boycott rent. It makes me think of Mike Cantu. He has a saying he doesn't like owning. I think he was the one who said he doesn't like owning properties where the only thing separating the tenants is, you know, a wall or something. So, yeah, in masses, it makes people, you know, get together and make bad choices. And it's California. And it's just, I wish we could all sort of, if you can, you should, across the board. But what are you going to do? I am very interested to find out as this progresses. I'm interested to see in migration trends still. So for people, I have talked to investors that are thinking even more so about, I'm leaving. I'm done with California, not just because of coronavirus or rethinking their urban experience, but how the state has responded has them worried, and they just don't want that kind of risk in their life, and they want life to be boring. So
I'm glad you bring that up, because you're right. I do have a couple clients who brought that up to us as recently as yesterday. Yeah. So I said, Amanda, I'm selling California properties. I don't want a 1031 exchange right now, or at least if I do, I'm not going to be in California because I listen to Bruce Norris. So I need a way to avoid taxes. So yes, we are seeing quite a bit of those right now.
Yeah, and I'm really glad I got rid of some of the stuff that I did, because I know I would have a problem with some of my tenants, and right now I have not. So I feel pretty lucky, but just a weird time out there. Well, I will thank you for taking the time. I didn't think we were going to be on the phone for half an hour, but thank you for giving a little bit of an update, and I know we'll be back before the end of summer trying to figure out how all this stuff is playing out. So be safe, you guys. Yeah. Thanks for letting me bug you today.
Thank you.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.